executive director at Parent Counseling, and I'm coming up on my fourth anniversary there as executive director. And I have the great honor of working there, where we help folks pass out symptoms of depression, anxiety, grief and loss, heartbreak, and brokenness. And this year we celebrate our 50th anniversary at Karen Counseling. We were founded in 1968. And for any of you who weren't alive in 1968, it was a wild time. Things were changing fast. We had big troubles with North Korea. The Vietnam War, the scales began to tip against the Vietnam War. The truth about racism in our nation came to the surface in a powerful new way. And the whole culture of what was right and wrong and proper and improper was shaken a little bit. In just such a time as that, a number of people, including the Episcopal City Mission, the Youth Counseling Service, Eden Seminary, came together and said, we need to create a place where people can come and get the best of psychology and therapy and the best of faith and deepest beliefs. And so Karen Counseling was founded. Our main office is on Ladue near 270, and where the old Thompson Center used to be, if you're familiar with that property. And a lot of things have changed since 1968, and sometimes I think a lot of things are the same as they were in 1968. And if you don't know much about Karen Counseling, we do provide counseling and training programs for counseling and consultation with congregations. And we hold amongst our clients some of the most influential citizens of St. Louis and some of the most vulnerable. We cover a theological breadth, a financial breadth, and we're just so proud of that. Last year, we gave away $1.2 million in unreimbursed services, and that's thanks to the contributions and funding from donors and funders. Our tagline this year is transforming lives for 50 years. But sometimes I wonder if our tagline shouldn't be transfiguring lives for 50 years. The other thing I like to say in our 50th anniversary, the next time you go to Busch Stadium, look around. It holds about 46,000 people. We've served more than that number of people since we started 50 years ago. So next time you go to Busch Stadium, look around and say, wow, that's the impact Karen Counseling has had. That's pretty cool. As I've gotten older, I've gotten a little bit kinder with myself. And I've come to understand and appreciate that many artists have a time in their development where they work over and over again on a certain theme, like Picasso's Blue Period or Monet's Repeated Water Lilies. Monet painted over 250 paintings of the water lilies from his own backyard. Something about those water lilies just captured him. And he wanted to portray what he saw with his eyes and his heart over and over and over again. And Picasso's Blue Period lasted about 2 or 3 years as he explored and worked through his own depression after the death by suicide of a close friend. The paintings from this period were very sober renderings of people struggling and suffering. And shocker, no one wanted to buy them. So in that period, his Blue Period, he was also poor because no one wanted to see what he saw and felt. Interestingly enough, today, those paintings are amongst his most highly valued work. So I'm kind with myself when I come back to something over and over again, as if I haven't quite plumbed the depth of this thing. And this happened to me this year. You know, on Sunday just before Lent starts, we often, I think always probably, read the story of the Transfiguration. And this year, Scholars believe it was the first gospel written down. And it's almost like the first telling of a story before you get all the facts quite lined up, prettied up, and you drop off the stuff that's a little unseemly. You know, it's before it's made more palatable for tender ears. Jesus is the most human in the book of Mark. And just before that story of the Transfiguration, and you can hear it in today's gospel story, Jesus is healing a lot of folks. And he's arguing with a lot of folks. And we hear that today, where they're like, Jesus, who do you think you are? We knew you were a little naughty little boy. Okay, I'm sure Jesus was probably never naughty. But they don't want to take him seriously. And in the Transfiguration story, too, he seems short-tempered and stressed out. And why not? The religious leaders are getting increasingly impatient with his newfangled and thus threatening teachings. The crowds are starting to track him closely, and desperate people are constantly seeking him out, begging in the most emotional and desperate way for him to heal their loved ones. I have to believe, too, that the disciples are starting to get pretty nervous at about this time. Who is this person I have dedicated my whole life to? People in his own town don't respect him. Everybody's mad at him. And these crowds who want him so badly are just hunting us. They decided to follow him because they thought he was going to bring them closer to God. But now it feels like that, you know, in a movie when there's a bad thing that happened, the music changes. The music is beginning to change. Maybe you know some of this feeling yourself, like in a family gathering, is Uncle So-and-so going to bring up that thing again? Because if he does, everybody's going to get mad. Or when you're having a discussion about something that you know is a very tender conversation, and you know it could go either way. Sometimes it can even happen in churches when the everything is awesome precept begins to crack under strong emotions, opinions, or a looming tragedy. I think that the disciples can feel the trauma of the passion and crucifixion brewing, and they are thick with dread and fear. I think all of them, including Jesus, are stressed out and afraid. So in just this moment, Jesus decides to take Peter, James, and John, his very closest disciples, up to a high and quiet place. Then this incredibly weird, strange thing happens. Jesus begins to glow. His clothes are dazzling white. Then Moses and Elijah appear out of nowhere. And you know, this was before photography. So Peter, James, and John just know that that's Moses and Elijah. And scripture is very clear here. It says they were terrified. And Peter, in this terrified state, like, well, I gotta do something. He decides to build a booth. Okay, let's build booths here. One for you, one for Elijah, one for Moses. Let's make permanent this thing. This momentary, fleeting thing. And then suddenly everything went back to normal. Moses and Elijah were gone. Jesus looked like his old, I assume, kind of drab self. He was the same Jesus, but they had seen him in a brand new light. And it's kind of interesting. As they were going back to the normal world, Jesus says, let's just keep this to ourselves for a little bit. You can tell folks later on, after the resurrection. That's when we get to the stigma. Why not tell people? Well, we know that people tend not to believe folks who tell nearly unimaginable tales. And credibility is an important commodity when you are building a movement. Credibility is elusive when you are trying to change fundamental religious and social structures. holding a shameful, dangerous secret. In the mental health field, we hold the stories, lives, and even the very psyches of our clients as a sacred trust. We understand the weighty responsibility of holding for another person in a very vulnerable time the essence of their identity and mind and soul, while they sort out their pain and confusion and suffering. And you know what I told you about that? We gave away $1.2 million in unreimbursed services last year. We do a lot of fundraising to make that happen. And people always want us to tell a client's story, a poster child, a success story. There's great pressure on us to share the successes of our clients in order to raise the money we need to make it all happen. But it is difficult, if not really impossible, to do that in the context of this most sacred trust. It would be a rare circumstance if we told someone else's story to raise money. People will come to us, it's their story. But sometimes confidentiality can get twisted to shame and stigma. Maybe Jesus and the gang were afraid of the stigma. Lord knows there's enough stigma out there for people who have had experiences we have not. But the revelation, the thing that has really captured me about this story for these many months that I'm still just sorting through, is that the Greek word used here for transfiguration, everywhere else in the New Testament, is translated as transformed or transfiguration. I mean, transformed or transformation. Here it's transfigured. Do we use that term anywhere in our culture? That's why it kind of worked for a tagline for us to say 50 years of transfiguring lives. But there's something different here between being transformed and being transfigured. I think that on that mountaintop, Jesus was not turned into something or someone new, but instead his true self and his deepest purpose were revealed. And those disciples saw him for who he truly was. And that's the reason why Elijah and Moses are there, to reveal that that's the league Jesus is in. For just a short amount of time, Peter, James, and John get a glimpse of just who it is they are following. I think we have the potential ourselves to have transfiguration moments where we are not turned into a different person than we are now, but who we were created to be gets revealed. And others see it, and we see it ourselves. And this is what I think we do at Caring Counseling. We help others become who they were always created to be. Whole, happy, adjusted to the terrible things that may have happened, the losses that may have come along, but restored to the self that they are. When people call Care and Counseling, I know that they are on a threshold. They are between being terrified. They call us often because they've tried everything else. And calling for therapy was about the last thing they wanted to do. And I can say that for myself as a person who sought therapy a few times in my life. I wish I could have done anything other than that when I first made that call. People call us and they're terrified, but they're also faithful. They're afraid of the place they're in and what they might have to, what the work they might have to do in therapy. But they're making the call and they're faithful. They're being faithful. You know, a threshold is that time when we're in between two different rooms, two different places. We're neither who we were nor who we are becoming. And some people in our culture are forced to live on a threshold. They're really not who everyone thought they were, and they're afraid no one's going to like or accept who they are, who they really are, who they'd like to become. It's a terrible, terrible place to live on a threshold. But all of us, sooner or later, find ourselves on a threshold. Maybe it's because that's just how our life has unfolded. We have some opportunity for personal growth, or we have an opportunity to try something new. Sometimes it's because a trauma ended our old life as we knew it, and we can't yet fathom our new life of safety and love and freedom. I believe that in threshold moments, God is with us on that threshold and calling us to the life meant for us. Because that's how God can be in two places at one time. I like that. God is with us on the threshold, helping us to move into the next place. No doubt you are aware of all the news about suicide in our culture in the last several weeks. And yet those are just pinpoints of time in the growth of the suicide rate in our country for the last 30, 20, 10 years. And there's a few things I want to say to you about that. If you have lost someone in your family to suicide, my heart goes out to you. If you are someone who's ever felt suicidal, I'm so glad you're here and that you didn't give up on your future self. And yet, all of us in this room, it would be possible for any of us to find ourselves in that place where we think we don't belong to anyone, we're a burden to those we love, and we're not afraid to die. So I want to tell you now, before you get into that place, you need to believe today so that you can believe then that you're, even if you are a burden to your family because they have to help you when you're so sick, which would be fine, right? If you had cancer, it'd be fine. It's fine if you have a mental illness too. But that whole thing about burden, if you don't want to be a burden to your family, do not take your life. Do not. Do not. Because you will magnify beyond your wildest dreams the kind of heartache your family will have for the rest of their lives. Doubts, questions. So today, while you're not feeling that, get it deep in yourself so that when you're there, you know, I can't do that. And if you know anyone who feels like they don't belong, anyone that you're worried about, reach out to them. Because their world has closed down to this tiny little pinhole. And they can't see how much you love them, how much you care about them. And they can't reach out to you. You probably can't call suicide hotline. Hopefully they can, but they might not. And then the other thing we all need to do now is belong to one another. We're all connected on Facebook and other things, networks. Remember Rolodexes? Those of you who weren't born in 1968, you don't know about Rolodexes either, but we're connected, but we don't belong to each other. So make sure you belong to people and that they belong to you. I want you to stay. I want you to stay. Tell yourself now, tell those you love, tell those you know that suicide is not the right option to end your suffering. We have to believe that God is calling us into a new way of being, while at the same time being right here with us on the threshold. In today's gospel, Jesus is in the midst of not being belonging, not being honored, being discounted. And so what do? They anointed and healed people. That's what we're called to do. I am honored beyond all imagining to be at Care and Counseling, and a small part of bringing children, teens, women, men, couples and families over a threshold from pain and confusion and suffering into hope and healing and wholeness. Helping folks become who they were always meant to be, who they were created to be. And I know that you, this church, you people, even though some of you might be human and a little flawed, you have and can and will make this too a place of healing for people living on the threshold and stepping into that new life as Jesus' people. Here in this place and in the community and in the world. May we all find the blessing of threshold moments as we each and all become who we were always created to be.